Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 8th of November, recording at 9:23 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, well, my goodness, another really exciting day. In stock markets, Asia was weaker, not surprisingly, following that close on Wall Street yesterday. That also weighed on the European markets today, although that amazing Spanish market scored a gain going against the general trend in here. And actually, the DAX was up a little bit today as well. Wall Street, my goodness. Well, it absolutely, well, another sharp drop. I don't want to indulge in too much hyperbole. This time with the NASDAQ leading on the downside after those somewhat disappointing figures from Cisco. And then we saw Wall Street mostly recover, only to sell off again, and then recover to being up slightly. NASDAQ accepted about 10 minutes before the close, and then to close, then to finish out with a very, very modest decline, down just a quarter of 1% on the Dow and almost unchanged on the S&P. It had the look of plunge protection team about it. So maybe the Fed or the Treasury or both are using some of that liquidity that they've been throwing at the markets to, or throwing into the system, to support the stock market. So it certainly wouldn't surprise me. Now, against that background of general weakness, though, government bonds were a little bit steadier, but it's been quiet action here overall. Precious metals had strong gains early in the day, then gave them up, moved into the minus column, and then mostly closed with modest gains. excuse me. I'll give you an idea of the swings. Gold bullion is up 50 cents as I speak in after-hours trading. It's at 831.60. The range on the day is 845.67, which it saw earlier in the day, and 823.91. So quite a large range. More on that later. Silver rallied quite strongly, fell all the way back, and then closed upwards modestly. That's pretty much the story. Palladium and platinum were quieter. Industrial metals, a bit mixed. Copper, most on the downside, not heavily, but continues to ease. Nickel a bit steady in here today. The grains and beans, we had wheat soft hitting another reaction low, but it's a very orderly move ahead of this interesting USDA report that comes out tomorrow. Although, remember that email that I posted, it's this, they say the January report will be the really interesting one. And it said, I should say, or the writer said, and we had some modest gains in corn and soybeans the day before that report. And oil was a little bit easier, 95.60 in after-hours trading. That's pretty much it. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Well, we have very nervous conditions in stock markets, as you will have noticed. This is due to the weakness that we've seen in the banking sectors in the West, European and particularly U.S. banks. They were weak again today, although in the U.S. we saw a pretty good rebound along with the general market towards the close. Wall Street has suffered some technical damage in here. Now, it's not fatal, but it suggests that moves up to new highs for the year are not going to be all that easy to achieve. And today, platinum lost its Teflon quality in terms of resistance to downward moves by the other U.S. stock market indices. So we're in a reaction phase here overall. We see this also in Asia. China is sort of in a some very mild sort of reaction and consolidation. I think in Asia, it's pretty much of a consolidation. In the European and North American, or US, I should say, the US and European indices, the picture is really less clear. Other than Spain, few of these markets, I think Finland perhaps, but few of these markets have broken up out of their ranges, which date back to well before the midpoint of the year. So this type of activity, I think we can attribute very much to what's going on with the bank shares. I've always emphasized that what's good for the banks is good for markets generally, and vice versa. So, really, the best case situation is we get more underperformance from Wall Street and the European markets, but the risks ha remain uncomfortably high in those US and European markets while the banks are so weak. And we await an all clear signal from that financial sector. It's hard to see why that would take place when we're getting these daily reports of huge losses and write-downs. Now, a lot of people had been saying, well, third quarter figure is understated, the fourth quarter figures would be worse. Well, maybe so, but I do feel that before the end of the year, most of this bad news is going to be known. And therefore, we may see a steadier footing overall. But really, that's just a hunch. And it all depends. Watch the performance of the bank shares, as I've said on so many occasions. They look good in Asia. Fuller Money Themes, resources look good. Rio absolutely soared here today on a takeover move from BHP. There's a good article, and I've written about that and the sector at some length. And that just gives me another reason not to have any inclination to chop back my own portfolio. And it's terribly tempting when you see the types of gains that we saw occurring following those August lows, the Asian emerging market theme, the resources themes, they just absolutely soared at a rate that I do think I emphasized on a number of occasions was unsustainable. And left them vulnerable to some reactions and consolidations and mean reversion. Well, I'm happy to ride out a reaction and consolidation and mean reversion. Now, with pandemonium in the Western financial markets, then, and I'm talking about the banks once again, then one wouldn't really have any antennae if we didn't think, gosh, this is a little bit risky. I wonder if I shouldn't chop back somewhat. Is that rather thoughtful and articulate email that I posted yesterday discussed in mostly in question form. And but I'm not going to do it. Just think if I had. Just think if I'd taken out the Rio Tinto zinc. I'd feel sick about it. Did I call it Rio Tinto Zinc? That's the old name, Rio Tinto. If I had taken that out because I thought, well, that's done pretty well and it's near the highs, and I'm worried about contagion, and the thing goes racing ahead. Or what about these gold shares that are doing so well? So, no, and I think that old adage, when no one ever went broke by taking a profit. Well, one got rich by running profits. would be my riposte. So I'm not going to worry overly about those positions. What else to mention in here? Now, the gold action. Let's talk about that. Obviously, the dollar will be a factor. Obviously, there is some contagion risk from stock markets, but that's one heck of a lot less than it was prior to this move on the upside. In other words, while gold and other precious metals were in that consolidation phase, remember, following the peak in April of last year, I believe it was, and then the big pullback and all that ranging activity. During all that ranging activity, which was clearly a big consolidation, the contagion during a Wall Street sell-off was quite strong because there wasn't we didn't have trending markets in the precious sector. People were uncertain and a little bit disillusioned with precious metals because of the length of that consolidation. On long-term charts, it looks like only a normal, healthy pause. But if we have to live through it, and your market's messing around for the better part of a year and not doing anything, that seems, well, it undermines confidence, let's say. So now, with the precious metals clearly having reinstated their overall upward trends, and with interest picking up, the contagion effect from Wall Street is much reduced, and I think that makes sense, and I think that will continue. Now we have to be a little bit careful. All those people talking about 1,000 gold and so on, and then the people talking about 2,000 gold tells us that not only is this topical, but that it's getting a little bit boisterous, a little bit exuberant in here, and that consolidations are likely and underway. Now, I think, for instance, that gold is going to see a tight consolidation. I don't tight in not that big a range, maybe $30, $40. I don't know how long it will last, but I'm more concerned about the activity overall, and that the kind of gyrations that we saw yesterday and that we saw today indicate that a lot of consolidation is taking place. People coming out, nervous holders coming out, and I suspect if it is a consolidation, as I believe it is the case, then I suspect that we're getting some strong hand buying, and some of that may well be from developing country central banks, which would hardly surprise me. So my hunch is to say that we'll see gold consolidating below this $850 level, the old high back in 1980, even though the 1980 high in inflation-adjusted terms would be over $2,000 now. Puts it in perspective, doesn't it? So I think we'll see more of that consolidation type of activity here over the short term, and I don't think it'll last for more than a few weeks, and then we get another run on the upside. I see. Similarly, and I'm talking about spot bullion when I mention that price range under eight, consolidating under 850. I see silver consolidating mostly above $15 on the spot price, and I see platinum similarly consolidating below the 1500 level. These are all big figure psychological levels here, so that makes sense to me. Then I think we're going to get another run, and I think in a way it would be better if we didn't have a US dollar in free fall if the dollar ranges lower, that's fine. Now, more on that dollar. It's been one of my big concerns about stock markets that we would see the dollar's decline. Yeah, I'm sure you recall this. All but the newest subscribers will recall this. So it's point that I repeat that one of my big concerns was that the dollar's decline would eventually go into an acceleration. Now, it would be premature to call it an acceleration, but it certainly has gathered pace recently, whereas previously you'd get a small step down by the dollar and then you'd get several weeks ranging, another small step down. Well, clearly, over the last fortnight, we've seen a more persistent form of selling in the US dollar. Now, that type of activity plays on anxieties in all markets, but particularly in stock markets. And we're seeing that right now. And you get the whiff of the C word, the crisis talk coming in. This is not yet a crisis, but people are certainly becoming anxious. And if the dollar's rate of descent steepens from here, I do think that will indeed weigh on stock markets in the short term. Now, I've often mentioned that I felt that we would not see an end to the dollar's decline until, or we wouldn't know that we were in the beginning of the end of the dollar's decline until we saw some multilateral central bank intervention, a very rare occurrence. You can look it up on the search engine. Newer subscribers, if you want to read about this, I've written about it many times. I'm not going to review all that now, but just type in intervention and into the search facility, and that should bring it up. Now, the problem, though, is that we have a worse dollar problem this time than at any other time that I've ever seen in my lifetime. And it would go back a good deal further than my lifetime because the dollar was a pretty strong currency, really, in that whole pre-World War II and post-World War II, ditto World War I for the most part. So this is a serious dollar crisis. There are just too many dollars around, basically, and the U.S. economy is weak. And the U.S. is a massive debtor nation, as you know, from governments right through to consumers. But it's the government debt that concerns me the most, and the creditor nations. And those are mostly developing countries. Japan, though, also is a major creditor nation for the U.S. But those developing economies, not least China, people continue to go on talking about the risk. Well, it's news to me if the creditors are more risky than the debtors. I don't quite see the logic of that. But the point I'm making is that the creditor countries now are very antsy, reluctant, in other words, to hold on to those huge hundreds of billions or even over $1 trillion any longer. So they want to diversify out. So if we were to get multilateral intervention, you can imagine the reluctance at this stage of central banks to participate, because what would they be doing? What would we be asking them to do, or what would they be asked to do through multilateral intervention? Basically, it would be to buy dollars. Well, they have too many dollars already, so they don't want to come in and buy dollars. And those that have less dollars, but still hold them, like the Bank of England or the ECB, would be thinking, well, we'd be mugs to do this because what we'd really be doing is bailing out the Chinese or the Japanese or some of those other Asian countries or the Middle Eastern oil producing countries that hold those vast dollar reserves. And why should we do that? They would think to themselves quite rightly. And put yourself in their position. Would you, for instance, go in and buy lots of dollars to help stabilize the currency? Well, some of the American listeners may feel that, well, yes, it's a sort of a patriotic act to turn it around, but that's the only way you could rationalize doing that. So, again, remember the premise, or the precondition, I should say, for multilateral central bank intervention, which is very rare, is that every central bank would really have to feel, I'm talking about the leading, the big central banks, would have to feel that a continuation of the dollar's trend was not only very detrimental to their own economic prospects, but that by not supporting the dollar, they would be even worse off despite the risk of taking on the additional dollars. And of course, what they would be hoping to do would be to create a bear squeeze. Sometimes people call this a bull squeeze or whatever, but what they would be hoping to do is to squeeze the shorts, the people, all those currency traders and so on who have been hedge funds that have been shorting the US dollar, which has become the carry trade of choice now. So that's what the central banks would be hoping to do, to come in and shock the market with some buying, create a big upward dynamic on the charts, and get all those forex traders scrambling to cover shorts, pushing the dollar up further, and then that would cause the black box systems that a lot of them operate, nothing other than moving averages for the most part, to give buy signals. And so they'd go from short dollars to long dollars, and in that process of going long dollars, the central banks would hope to finesse out, in other words, put their support purchases of dollars back into the market. Well, that's a high stakes game, and if you and I were going to play that, we'd want to see that US dollar really ridiculously overextended on the downside before saying that that kind of speculation was worth considering. So that's where it leaves it. That didn't say much. That's where I'll leave the dollar intervention story. I think this goes down lower. If it goes down very fast, it'll weigh on stock markets. If it ranges, if it slows down a little bit, that would be good all around because we do need a softer. The U.S. needs a softer dollar overall. The rest of the world needs that softer dollar overall to help some of these imbalances to be corrected. Meanwhile, if there's a better script for precious metals, I haven't heard of it. And of course, they're appreciating against all currencies right now, not on an everyday basis, but overall, you can see all those charts in the library. So we want to think in terms of upward pressure on these resources prices, which are calculated in dollars. And then we also have the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme for all these resources. So that's the way I see it here on Thursday, the 8th of November. Owen will be doing the big picture long-term outlook forecast tomorrow because I will be away in the afternoon and evening, which is why I've made a slightly longer recording here tonight. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you.